Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. I'm just gonna get closer.
All right, ladies. Ladies, if I can have your attention.
Pop one so you can hear me.
We don't have microphones.
No microphones. So if you maybe bear with us, we'll try to project as much as possible. We're going to go ahead and start early since all of y'all seem to be sitting so intently already. My name is Melissa Costa, and we're going to be talking to you a little bit how to lead with your individual personality. And if you know or don't know, we're going to kind of center that around something called the Enneagram. If I could have these ladies just introduce yourself real quick.
Yeah, I'm Jen Bell. Hello.
I'm Rosa Torres.
And we all, as you'll know, we kind of take up, it's just happened this way, we all kind of take up our own section of the Enneagram, which worked out great. But we are going to center it around the Enneagram, which is a typing system for personalities. You have a handout that kind of has a page for each of the 9 different types. And between the 3 of us, we're going to kind of give a little bit of what our personality has been a part of our leading, just how that has come about. We each are going to describe 3 of the 9 types to you and just give a little bit of a teaser as to what they are and maybe listen to which one maybe rings true for you. And then let you know each of the one we'll talk about, our own type is within it. Just maybe give you a little bit more information around it. Leading with your personality means that you are aware of who you are and also who you are not, and that you know what you can give to others and what others may need to give to you. We've just found, I think all of us in different ways have found this to be so incredibly helpful for just being able to know who we're designed to be, who we are the best at being, and who we just don't need to try to be, and we let others come alongside us in those regards. Mm-hmm. So first, just a little, what is the Enneagram? So it's a model, like a visual model of the human psyche, taught as 9 interconnected personality types. The word personality is actually driven from the Greek word for mask, which is persona, reflecting our tendency to confuse the mask we wear with our true selves that we have inside. Our personality helps us know and do what we need to do to please our parents, to fit in, to relate to our friends, to satisfy expectations of our culture, and to get our basic needs met. So you have that handout, and just as we go through, as you can tell, it starts at the number 8, so we'll go through in the order that it's listed in there. We'll explain that a little bit further. So each number on the Enneagram represents a unique strategy for relating to things and each other in the world. Each has a different way of thinking and feeling and acting. To say it another way, it's 9 ways that we lie to ourselves about who we think that we are, 9 ways that we can come clean about those illusions, and 9 ways that we can really just focus on getting to a healthier place with God and those around us. After I found my type, I was not exactly thrilled. We'll get to that when I get to my type, which is actually how it normally goes. But I found words and patterns that I had been hoping for years to kind of coin about myself just to make myself feel more secure, and also things that I probably would have never concluded about myself, but when I read it, it was just like dagger to the heart. Dagger to the heart in a good way, that I just felt like someone was looking at the inside about how I thought about everything, which is terrifying and also really freeing at the same time. So my obsession with the Enneagram system began. So sitting in these things and learning how to feel everything that comes in, the tendencies that I lean toward, all of it's really opened my eyes as to who I'm supposed to be for God and for his kingdom and for those around me, that I'm not supposed to be what maybe people I want to be, that I'm not supposed to be like them, that I'm filling my own gap in this church, in this leading, in the groups that I'm in, that I'm filling a specific position. Also recognizing that there are 8 other general ways that people relate to others and to God gives me a lot more grace to say that it's okay that it doesn't happen my way. That's definitely something I can get into, to think, why don't you think this way? Why don't you react this way to certain things? And that it just really gave me a lot of grace to say, that person is a lot more intent about something else that I'm not, and I should just be thankful for that. I want to learn how to better connect with God so I can improve, and we're all meant to be in community together, and we're meant to be in relationship together and leading each other just exactly how we are and not any different. So I hope that none of this puts you in a box or makes you feel like we're trying to say, this is who you are, like it or not, this is the path that you're on. Hopefully it's the opposite. Hopefully it's something that you feel lets you get out of a box that you felt like you've been in, out of somewhere that you feel like, I can't get to this place, or I can't do this thing that somebody else does, but hopefully just encourages you that what you have and how you love others is very intentional and purposeful. So with that, a word of warning. A lot of things that we say may seem like we're focusing on the negative parts of the personalities, and we're going to, because it's really hard to just see the positive parts of your personality and find room to improve, because it's so much easier to take the good parts about ourselves and just want to push aside the bad parts. So if it sounds like we're being pretty rough on you, we are, for good reason, for good reason. So if you feel uncomfortable while we're explaining one of the nine types, probably a good trigger that you should maybe look into that a little further and just learn more about it. This kind of got brought up already. It is a general rule to never type any person. So please don't go home and say, honey, oh my gosh, I know you're a type one, or you know, your best friend, or whatever it may be, because that just turns people off, because I definitely learned that. But hopefully just letting people know to look into it and just see how it may help them. So first, the first page on your handout is the Enneagram 8, and that is my type. I am the challenger. So I'll just give you a little bit of a background on what a type 8 is and kind of my experience living through that. 8s are fiercely independent people whose energy expresses itself in a need to be strong. They may be a little quick to the draw, firing off rounds before thinking. 8s do not come equipped with dimmers. What feels to others like intimidation from us feels like intimacy. Conflict is connection. We don't see ourselves as angry people, but we see ourselves as honest, straight-talking people that aren't afraid to go nose-to-nose with what life throws at them. 8s care about justice and fairness. They're advocates for groups needing to be supported and have no problem speaking truth to power. They believe their viewpoints are irrefutable. That's a rough one. They believe not having clarity or absolute certainty represents weakness. We value truth. We know that a confrontation can expose what's really happening behind the scenes for someone and maybe force their real intentions or agendas out into the open, which we like. Not, and very many other people like that. Each type has a deadly sin, and for the 8s, the deadly sin is lust, but not in a sexual sense. We lust after intensity. Sometimes we make people wary with that. It can be threatening. I treat people how I want to be treated, and that does not always go well with that very intense conversation. A lot of times I'm really worried about betrayal, mostly thinking, do you really want to love me, or do you want to love me into something more manageable? For me, I have a natural tendency to lead. It does not scare me to lead a discussion group or come up here to do something like this, though I was for sure nervous coming up here in front of you ladies. But it comes quickly. I'm afraid, always afraid, that I don't come across as thoughtful, that I don't come across that I care. And I worry about not getting honest because people won't give that back to me, that I would turn people off if I was too honest with them, because I just really want that. Recently, when I was leading a group at church, there was a little bit of a chatting problem. They were all kind of, you know, doing their thing and chatting too much, and I just couldn't get control of them because they love each other and they just wanted to be together. And I went from 0 to 60, just heat rising all the way to here. And in my heart, all I said was, be quiet. But their faces said that I did not say that, that I said something a lot more forceful. Someone even said, that was scary. I just got, you know, in my frustration. And as we went through our thing, they helped me laugh it off. I took an opportunity to apologize to them and just say that I knew that I came across way more strongly than I intended to. And they showed me a lot of grace. But I will say, leaving that night, I thought to myself, why am I doing this? Nobody, who's going to want a leader that's going to yell at them? I'm yelling at them. I felt as loving, trying to get it together, but that's not how it came across. And they showed me a lot of grace. They didn't hate me afterward. In fact, somebody actually said, we're glad that we know the real you. You're just being real. And the fact that you apologize about it. So they told me that I was appreciated and I was still okay to be there. I know I shouldn't stop serving in ministries because I mess up or feel less than. I have never felt the Lord shutting doors on these opportunities, only opening them. He doesn't promise what's behind each door, just that he will continue to lead me into the next one that I feel opening. It's enough about eights. We don't need any more of that harshness. I will move on to the next page, which is the nine. And we do, there is some descriptions at the top of each of those, kind of what they are. The peacemaker is the nine. I tried to just leave it at nine just because I don't want, again, a label put on. Some of them just kind of help you know what they are, but I'll just refer to them as the numbers. Nines are often unclear about who they are and what they want. Nines often feel unimportant and not special enough. They don't matter, and they can't change anything. They take off when starting a project, and then halfway through, they may lose steam. To avoid conflict and inner turmoil, they fall asleep to their feelings. Nines hold up two very important boundaries: to defend their inner center from a negative outside world, while also defending their interior against unsettled feelings that arise from within. It takes a lot of effort. No wonder nines are tired all the time. Nines frequently feel torn between wanting to please others and wanting to defy them. When they make a decision, they will look calm on the outside, but inside feel overwhelmed with what to do. They may never even get around to deciding on something. Fence sitting can lead to procrastination. Nines often drop their healthy boundaries to fuse with a more assertive partner whom they idealize or from whom they hope to glean a sense of identity. But after a while, they don't know where they end and the other person begins. Nines' deadly sin is sloth, not physically, but spiritually. They're disconnected from the passion and drive to live their life, and they're empathetic, but they are empathetic and recognize merits of different perspectives. So since I can't speak to the other two types that I'm doing, I got a couple quotes from people who are those types. One lady said, "Growing up, I was the easy kid. That doesn't mean that I was ignored, but I preferred being under demanding. I know I have a tendency to daydream or check out when there's conflict or when I feel out of my element in a social situation. I'm continually working on being more assertive in my day-to-day life, as I just usually go with the flow. I'm seen as a quiet person. I never say something just to say it. If I'm contributing to a conversation, I can guarantee that I've been thinking about it, about what I'm going to say for a lot longer. That being said, I can be quite feisty to those who I see being in my inner circle." One other nine said, "Being nine is a mix of niceness and doubt and overthinking. Niceness instead of kindness, because I can be nice while still resenting people. Mm-hmm. Doubt, because I believe in God, but doubt that he loves me. And overthinking, because doubt lacks trust. And when I lack trust, I can't take things into my own hands." So the last one that I'm going to cover are type ones. Ones have a high expectation of others and themselves. Wherever they go, errors and mistakes jump out at them and yell, "Fix me." They just can't leave it alone. They're mercilessly hard on themselves, demanding perfection in certain areas or across the board. Ones are the type of person to send in an email to those in charge with a list of suggestions or areas of improvement, and they correct it when the dishwasher is loaded wrong. Some ones are not so worried about environment, but are concerned about committed to addressing social ills. Because they occupy the superior moral, ethical, and spiritual ground, they believe their way is the right way to see things and do things. Ones are terrified of making a mistake. The negative self-commentary of their inner critic prevents them from receiving criticism well. But they always get the job done. And because of this, the world is riddled with mistakes, and they keep a list of things to do. Anger is their deadly sin, but calling it resentment is more true to what it feels like. A couple quotes from ones. "I didn't realize until recently, but the critical voice that has caused me a lot of anxiety has been there forever. I can feel overwhelmed by all I want to do to the degree that I think I need to do these things. It can build up pressure in my chest so that it feels like I'm holding the weight of the world and can barely breathe. In the past, in not being a healthy..." "As being a one, my body was affected by high anxiety and an inability to relax and rest. Having always been on the move and on the go, doing more and more to the point of exhaustion, sleep has never come easy to me. My body is in a constant state of inertia, driven by my inner voice that says it's never enough." One more quote of ones. "Overall, being a one is exhausting. From the moment I wake up until asleep, I find the world full of errors and feel a need to fix them. That can be errors in a room, an unmade bed, something out of place, errors with the policies or procedures of a task, errors with a person and how they are behaving. It's a negative worldview, and the harshest voice is the one I have about myself. I find that my self-talk is easily negative and full of shoulds when unhealthy, my inner critic is the most listened to. So the reason that I went over 8-9-1 is because those are called triads. So three of them together are the anger or gut triad. And it's shown in that 8s, my type, we externalize it. The 9s, forget about it. They have anger, but they just want to keep pushing under the rug. And 1s internalize it, that the resentment that I was talking about. I've heard the Enneagram described as 9 different colors. So I'm an 8, and maybe all 8s are green. Maybe my type of 8, the way that I live my 8 out, I look like lime green. And there's another 8 that just looks a lot more like forest green. So even though saying that you're a type 8, people can look a lot different. It's just knowing what those inner motivations are, the way that you function, the way that you process life, the way that you respond to it, just generally tend to be about the same. And I want to say in closing, before I let these ladies go, that there's no way to coin you and everything that you are, but I just hope that this gives you a thread to maybe see how you function and to improve that, or how not to. How to stay exactly as you are, and that is your intended purpose. And that's good. We need each of you, each gift in the world, and we need each type in this church for it to be able to function in the way that it's supposed to. We need to balance each other, and just to know that none of these types, even some who are more led to lead rather than the other, that none of them are better as a leader than the other one. They just speak to different hearts in a different way, in a more sweet way that they're supposed to. On to Jen.
Okay. So, she said, I think, what did you call your triad?
Anger. Good.
Okay. So, I think of that one as more body. So, those people tend to be physical, want to work out. Maybe the one has struggles sometimes with, like, eating disorders and stuff. So, as we go into the heart triad, this is 2s, 3s, and 4s. So, we'll start with the 2. The struggle for the heart triads is that they worry that they have no identity. So, they're looking for identity in the wrong places. And so, generally speaking, with Enneagram, I think I fell in love with it because it just gives us compassion for one another. How many of you guys have ever heard about the Enneagram before today? Raise your hand really high. How many of you think you know what you are? Okay, cool. I'll tell you what you are, even though you're not supposed to. Because I'm a 2 and you'll find out why. We are the most relational, so the heart triad, we're all about people, and that's not always good. We are the most image conscious of all the triads. We are driven by our feelings, and that can often mean shame. Heart triads have a hard time believing that they are loved for who they are. They tend to try to hide their true self and project an image of what they believe is more likable. So we're kind of like chameleons. So the 2s, I'm focusing outward on the feelings of others. The 3s tend to have trouble recognizing their own feelings or yours. And 4s often focus attention inward on their own feelings. Basically, 4s don't have feelings, they are feelings. So you'll hear that come out. So 2s, the helper. So if you're a 2, I'm a helper, I'm a 2. So we can talk after, because we have a lot of
self-help.
Yes. So at their best, they are unselfish and altruistic. They can, and this is the healthy side, they can have an unconditional love for others. They tend to be friendly, sincere, warm-hearted, generous, self-sacrificing. They could also be sentimental, flattering, and people pleasers. They can be well-meaning and driven to be close to others in order to be needed, but they can also struggle with possessiveness and acknowledging their own needs. Their basic fear is to be unwanted or that they're unworthy of love. And then the motivation underlying a lot of this is the need to be needed. So they really have this, they just want to be needed, they want to be invited in. And their basic desire is to feel loved. We can often project a false image to earn love and approval. With the identity issues, do I even have an identity? I think sometimes 2s can lose their identity because I struggle, like some of the boundaries, some of the numbers have boundaries. So you might see a castle, there's a moat, the door's up. I don't even have a moat, I don't have walls on my castle. So everybody's in and out, and then I'm in your castle, and you didn't even ask me to come in. So our passion is pride, and they appear selfless and focus on the needs of others while refusing to acknowledge to themselves that they have needs too. So if you have a 2 in your life, they might struggle with self-care. They might put on someone else's oxygen mask and not do theirs, and then they die. 2s want you to rely on them, but they don't want to rely on you because you might reject them. So it doesn't mean that they don't think you can, they're just scared that you'll say no. So they're scared to ask. Twos believe that other people are more needy than they are and that they alone know what's best for others. So I like to hear things like, I couldn't have done that without you. Thank you so much. You know, if I don't get a note in the mail for a long time, I feel like my life is a failure because I didn't help anyone enough for them to pick up a pen and a piece of paper and write a note. And it's been like 2 years. Our wounding message is everyone else's needs are more important than ours. And people are our drug of choice. So I am a people addict. You can say I love you, Jen, or whatever you can. It's also said that twos are often on the make, so they come across as very loving, very giving, but they can have, in an unhealthy two, a very underlying, there's a goal for that, so you can't always trust that when they're offering themselves to you, which is pretty sad, but regen really helped with that for mm-hmm. me. They are caregivers, and they kind of want to be indispensable, so they give love to get love, and that's a lot of what Enneagram is you're trying to figure out where you belong. Aren't we all? Just shake your head if you want to belong. Yeah. Like, so the Enneagram is so cool because it helps you understand. I'm already being able to see these elements in some of my children, and it just gives me so much compassion for them because the things that drive you nuts, you start to realize that's because they're just trying to receive love in their way and it's not your way. I don't know anyone whose kids are the same. So that's really for us to be learners of our kids and our spouses and our friends. Twos do not enjoy criticism. We're the most sensitive of all the types. So we can get through it, but it's really hard. And we're very physical. We're very comfortable touching you and receiving hugs. A couple words to the twos. You do not have to earn love, okay? You are enough in Christ. You don't have to suffer alone. Steward your personality. You do have a personality, or does your personality have you? So sometimes it just takes, I'm just hanging on to the coattail of my personality, and it's like, getting me committed to things that I shouldn't be. No is a full sentence. Burnout is very common for twos. Pray and think before you say yes, and realize that you are not the only one that can make the thing happen. If you love a two, ask them about how they're taking care of themselves. Ask them if they have any needs, and tell them what you love about them so they can hear that. And I think twos are a good picture of just the love of God. So you see him. Some examples are Eleanor Roosevelt, Nancy Reagan, Josh Groban, and Stevie Wonder. Okay, on to the threes. Performer, achiever. Their passion is deceit, and it's often they're deceiving themselves more than they're deceiving other people. Their basic fear is of being worthless. Their basic desire is to feel valuable and worthwhile. They believe that the world only values or loves people who are successful. Their superpower is that they can quickly come into a room, they can read the feelings, they can feel the values and the preferences in the room, and then they can switch themselves up and present and then win the crowd over. So you'll see, sometimes eights and threes get, you know, kind of confused with each other, but the threes are gonna have all their accolades on the wall, all their trophies from elementary school are gonna be like on the mantle because they present them, they want you to know, they want you to clap for them. So threes on a bad day need that. They're very competitive and ambitious, but they're also our world changers. They're extremely successful. They think they have to win and make winning look easy. They have to ace every test, win every game, close every deal. They tend to always be striving, and they often mention their triumphs. They'll name drop, and they maneuver to get ahead. They're very image conscious. Like I said, you'll notice that. They dress really well. They usually are just dressed to the nines. When they're healthy, they're extremely optimistic, resilient. They dream big dreams. They inspire other people to follow them, so they're natural leaders. When they're self-aware, they have nothing to prove. So when they're healthy, they've been through regen. Now they can actually sit with someone else.
Regen plug.
I learned Enneagram right when I was in regen, and oh my stars, they go together, y'all.
Yeah.
So if it's your healthy three, then you're going to help other people dream their dreams, and you're going to come alongside them and help them. They're no longer terrified of failure because threes do not want to fail in front of people, and they can share openly about their weaknesses and mistakes, and they really are a sight to behold for the world. So if you're a three, and it could be a little negative on the three, I think, because we're a world where humility is so, you know. A few suggestions: be truthful, express your genuine feelings and needs, resist the temptation to impress others or inflate your own importance. Take breaks, because threes will drive themselves to exhaustion in this need to be successful. Develop social awareness. You want to work well with others. Sometimes threes will just get out ahead and they don't want a team and they're just forging their path, and it can be impressive. But if you're a three, you need to take the time and invite other people, because you do have weaknesses. You really do. Don't lose touch with what you feel, and don't adapt so much to what other people desire. So some examples are Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, and Oprah. Okay. And then last but not least, the fours. Okay. So some people call the fours the romantic, but typically I hear individualist. Okay, so this is a very interesting one. I have someone close to my life who's a four, and it's really interesting to walk beside this person, because it's just a struggle. Life is harder for fours. It just is. But they have so much to offer the world. So they see themselves as fundamentally different from others. They often don't feel understood or adequately loved. They see themselves as uniquely gifted, special, one of a kind, but they also feel profoundly flawed. They are aware of their personal differences and deficiency, and their pattern or their passion is envy. Their basic fear is that they have no identity or personal significance. Their basic desire is to find themselves and that significance that they don't know that they have. They tend to be creative, sensitive, and moody. They're self-aware and reserved. They're emotionally honest and self-conscious. They can withhold from others due to feeling defective, and they fear vulnerability. They can struggle with self-indulgence and also self-pity. At their best, they're inspired and highly creative. They're able to create things based on their ability to go deep. So these people, just they are their feelings. So they feel deeply, they go there. If you're having a bad day or a tragedy happens, they're right with you. If a tragedy happens, I am so scared to do something wrong. So I want to be there for people, but as a two, I'm like, ah, I don't wanna. But the four is like, right there. And they're just so comfortable in those deep feelings. Writers, artists, musicians, some of our best creatives are fours. They envy the normalcy, happiness, and comfort that others seem to move through life with. They assume everyone else has this thing that is missing in them. So they basically feel like they're a stranger in the world. They're in that island of misfit toys, stranger in the promised land, whatever you want to say. Envy sets the stage for low self-esteem and a quest to find what's missing. They might feel socially awkward, but they so desire to go deep and connect with people who understand them and their many, many feelings. It's easy for them to miss out on what's present and the great qualities that they do possess. They can often feel inferior because they don't think other people are flawed. They think they're the only flawed one in the room, and they really believe that. These are some of their preoccupations as a four. Others have what I do not. They tend to have an attraction to the distant and the unavailable. They have an attachment to the mood of melancholy and depth of feeling. So not necessarily always does it lead to depression, but a lot of people with depression are a four. Victor Hugo wrote, "Melancholy is the happiness of being sad." And looking through the eyes of this person that I'm talking about, yes, it is a bitter, kind of a bittersweet quality to that melancholy. Again, they see themselves as an outsider. They can take things personally and read negatively into a situation that really the person didn't mean that at all, but they can tend to be a little bit victim-y, if that's a word. Their underlying motivation is to be unique. They do desire to fit in and belong, so you think that they would want to blend in, but being like everyone else is the last thing they want. So you can see it's a rock and a hard place. They crave standing out in the crowd. They're beautiful in that they're comfortable in the deeper struggles of life. They will go there with you. They will sit with you in your pain, and they will help you feel, because so many of us don't know how to feel. They're not afraid to view themselves, warts and all, when they're healthy. They're willing to reveal very personal and potentially shameful things about themselves when they're healthy, and this helps them enduring that suffering in like a quiet strength. So they're beautiful people. A few words for them. Don't identify with your feelings. You are a mountain and you're not the clouds. Nothing's missing, and this is a big one. No emotion is final. Because they like the high emotions, but they also like the dark ones. Learn to let go of feelings from the past. They tend to take a past hurt and just milk it till they won't let it go. So they'll hold on to those negative feelings and then also the feelings associated with the people that cause the pain. Focus on the actual real blessings of your life, if you're a four, and not what's missing. And don't put things off until you're in the mood, because fours tend to have a hard time with motivation. So just, there's going to be a fulfillment that comes with forging ahead when you don't feel like it. Know that you won't find yourself in a vacuum. You've got to have people. You've got to have people in your life. Don't wait for inspiration to strike. Forge ahead. Stay connected to the real world and avoid lengthy conversations with yourself in your head. On to the third one.
So, like Ken and Melissa said, the Enneagram for me has helped to not only better understand who I am, but better how to serve other people. I always think of 1 Corinthians 12, where Paul's talking to the church in Corinth, and in verse 12 and 13, it says, "For even as the body is one, and yet has many members, for all the members of the body, though they are many, are one body, so also in Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jew or Greeks, whether slaves or free, we are all made in to drink from one Spirit." And so for me, it's just that reminder that we are all serving one body, we are all serving one God, but yet he made us so differently to function together to be able to further his kingdom. And so when I'm a five, and I am in the thinker triad slash fear. And so what I'm going to do is different. I'm going to do 6 and 7, and it'll come back to me. And so I can show you how I interact with a boss who's a 7 and who a father who's a 6. Mm-hmm. And so for Enneagram 6, where I'm going to start, they're the loyalist, the questionnaire. They're motivated by the need for security. Fear is their deadly sin, and it's also what motivates them as well. I look at Wendy because she's a 6. 6s are worst case scenario thinkers. So they are the ones that when you're planning a trip, they're asking the what if questions. So when you are getting, hey, we're going to get picked up from the airport. Well, what if they don't make it? Do we have backup? Well, what if, you know, the traffic is bad? Do we need to leave earlier? Well, what if it's cold? Should I pack the jacket for that just in case? So that's what they are. Because they're always thinking of the worst case scenarios, they struggle with worry and anxiety. They tend to question everything because of the thinking center of the Enneagram, the triad. With that, they have the most trouble connecting with their own inner guidance, which then results in lack of confidence in their own mind and own judgment. I've heard it as a push and a pull effect, where I don't want to make that decision, but I don't want you to make it. An example, or if I'm afraid of being alone, but I don't want to be dependent on you either. So, you know, it's kind of like, okay, how do we do this? They are the most committed to a community. So for a church setting, if you find a 6 who loves a church and is loves what they're doing, they will put a stake on the ground and say, this is my church until kingdom come. Like, and so they are the most committed to that. You could, keyword is could, be a 6 if you say or think any of these things. One would be, I often don't trust people who are in authority, meaning that they have, people who are in authority have a second agenda. So that's how they think. It's like, okay, so you're doing that, but what are you really saying? Most of my friends don't have as much anxiety as I do. I act quickly in a crisis, but when things settle down, I fall apart. I don't like to find myself in unpredictable situations, and people tell me I am overly pessimistic. So, if you want to know more about a 6, there's this awesome podcast called Typology, and episode 10 is all about 6s, so listen to that. An Enneagram 7, they are the enthusiast and adventure. They are motivated by happiness and wanting to maintain their freedom. Their deadly sin is to avoid pain. They will do anything till they don't have to feel pain at all, or feel pretty much emotions except for joy. They're the people who, when you're in your funeral and somebody's giving eulogy, they will throw a joke in the middle of it to just kind of ease that tension. When you're having that hard conversation with them, they're spinning it around to, you know, like, oh, they're just throwing something to make it funny and lighten up the situation. So if you're in a room and we're having a, you know, talking about something, they're the one who is like just dropping like that one liner joke that you're like, everybody gets everybody laughing. In high school, they were known as the class clowns in the back. And so they're also the ones who are enthusiastic about everything. I always think of the movie Up, where the dog finds their owner, and they're like talking and everything, and he's like, squirrel, like that's their attention span, is they are gonna go, and they're like, oh yeah, but there's this, and then like you have to kind of rein them back in to be like, okay, remember we're back here, let's talk about this again, you know? And so, yeah, they get distracted about what's going around them. Unlike the six, they are the ones that love spontaneity. They don't ever stop to think about the what if. They are the what not. Why not do this? Why not go on a trip to Yosemite? It's closed, but that's okay. We'll get through it somehow. Or why not, you know, go to Pismo? You know, like, they are the ones that at 2 a.m. they want Splash Cafe. So, they live for the next adventure, meaning they enjoy the anticipation of what is to come, but they have a hard time remaining in the moment of that adventure. So they're never really enjoying it, whatever they're doing, because they're always thinking and dreaming of what the next thing is. They like flexibility. They don't like to make long-term commitment. So they're the type when you say, hey, in like 2 weeks, let's have a barbecue. They're like, okay, we'll see. Because they don't know if something else in 2 weeks is gonna come up that they wanna do instead. So you could be a seven if you say or think these. I'm always the first person up for a last minute adventure. I don't like making hard and fast commitments to things. I suffer from FOMO, fear of missing out. It's hard for me to finish things. When I get close to the end of a project, I start thinking about the next thing, and then I get so excited, I sometimes just move on. I've heard the story of a person who was mowing the lawn, and then they thought of something, and like literally just walked off and went to do the next thing, and then the spouse came back, and the lawn is half mowed because they were so busy of like, yeah, I was doing this, but then I realized I need to go and, you know, empty the dishwasher, so I left this to go do that. So every project is only half finished. And so when things get too serious for too long, I usually find a way to get people to line up, often by telling a joke or funny stories. So if you want to know more about a seven, episode 45 on the Typology podcast is for you. So, and like I said, I'm a five. So for me, I am the investigator or observer. I'll use a we. We are motivated by knowledge. We believe that we don't have enough inner resource or energy to meet the demands of life, so we have to retreat and fuel. And so for me, that, I, for the longest time, was like, I think I suffer from social anxiety because being big places would be like too overwhelming. There's too many people. What do I do? I literally thought in my head, I think I have a disorder, and I need to go see somebody and figure this out because I don't know why I don't like going to big events. Like, I just couldn't understand it. So we have this training, and the guy Ian Crone, who wrote this book called Road Back to You, he came and taught about, and I started listening about the five, and he was dead on. I was like, oh, this affirms me that I'm not crazy. But it is that we have this much energy every single day. We wake up and we're like, okay, let's go. And then as the day goes on, we lose the energy to the point till we get depleted, and then we're just exhausted. We just need some me time, is what I always say. I just need some me time. Can I have a me day? Because we just need to recharge again so we can do the next thing. So for this conference today, I have all day yesterday to myself because I knew I was going to be around women. I wanted to love on them and do it, so I need to be the best me. But to do that, I had to have time to myself so I can be ready for this. See, we prefer to observe. So sometimes we can look like loners or seem like loners at a party because we're the ones in the corner watching everything going on. Knowledge and information is where we go. So for us, our fear or our sinful delight, whatever you want to call it, is fear of not being known. Of not being known in the part of knowledge. Like, so we want to, like, knowledge is going to drive us to everything. We are the ones where internet is our best and worst friend because we got it. We go on there and we'll look at everything that's going on, but yet we will go down the rabbit hole because we saw an article about women's prison, and now I want to know how many women's prisons are active in California, and what, and we just keep going down that hole. That's actually happened to me. So that's what we do. So sometimes we can be often called emotionless because we have so much thoughts in our head. Like, it's like a freeway that just never ends. There's so much going on that when a crisis comes up, we are thinking first of what the next steps is for this crisis, that we don't deal with the emotions right away until, like, we have time to process. So it could be 2 to 3 weeks, sometimes years later, that we actually stop and process it and feel it. So if you're at a funeral and somebody's crying and the person isn't, it's not that they don't feel it, they just need time to process that. You could be a five if you say or think these things. I need alone time. I think thoughts are more reliable than feelings. I need a couple of days to process and experience. I know how I feel about something. I don't like big social gatherings. I'd rather be a few people. Often I find that I would rather observe than participate. So I have 2 minutes left. So for me as a five working in ministry, it's hard at times because, like I said, my boss is a seven. So he's the bubbles or he's the squirrel, you know, type. So we've learned, and we have one-on-one meetings every week so I can see what needs to happen this next week, what to move forward, and, you know. And for him, we've gone from a 30-minute time limit, because I'm like, hey, let's go. We got this. Like, let me check off my boxes. Let me do what I got to do. Like, give me the knowledge. Give me the step to move on to the next task. For him, he's like, oh, hey, look at my kids, because he's just had twin boys. So he's like showing me how big they are. He's like, oh, hey, what do you think we need this in the middle of, like, item number two on my checklist? And so I've learned now to have, and for a while, when I first started working with him, it was trying to figure out how do we work together. And it was hard because I was getting frustrated with the fact that he was not, like, I felt like he was not taking this seriously. So I was like, I have a job to do. Like, I'm excited to go back in my corner, put my headphones back in, and to work. And I need to be able to move on. And he was like, squirrel. And so I was frustrated, and then we learned about this, and I learned to have so much grace with him. So I don't do a 30-minute meeting now. It's an hour. I know that if I have 8 things on the list I need to talk to him about, I'm gonna get through all 8. It's gonna take the whole hour, and in that, I'm gonna get interrupted at least 6 times with something random that has nothing to do with what we're doing, because that's just how God wired him. Yeah. But I've learned to have grace through that, and learned that no matter what, at the end of our hour every week, I'm gonna get my list done, and I'm okay with that. I've learned, and my parents just moved in with me, and so I'm working through the new family dynamic. And I learned that when my dad, when I lock the door, make sure the oven's off, and I do all my, you know, nightly routines, and he goes in the back and checks on me, he's not doubting me because he doesn't think that I didn't do it. He's a six. So for him, security is huge. So he is going to go ahead and double check and make sure that he locked the doors are locked, the oven's off, that our AC is on the right temperature. He got a dog that doesn't even like me. And I'm like, this dog doesn't like me. But it's such a great security dog. And for him, that's, he's like, he's going to protect you, and that's all that matters. And so that's what he is as a six. It's just reminding that. So I've learned in ministry and just be able to do it, like, to be able to have that time to love people for who they are and not try to change them for what I want them to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gotcha.
When do we need to be done?
We'll be done at 3:10, so we got 3 minutes for our last couple thoughts. I think we each have something we want to wrap up on. So you kind of, my last thing, at the last page, you kind of see that there's a resource page at the end there. And those are just a couple things. There are, the Enneagram has been around for hundreds of years, and really the origin of it is not known. So there are so many resources that you could go to. There's a lot of tests online. There are free ones. They always, you know, there are ones that you can pay for. They say are a little better. You could just read the book, and you probably could figure out what you are. But all these are kind of some of our favorite resources, just that we kind of use to do this, that we kind of center on. But there are a lot. I love that you mentioned the episodes of the podcast, because that's really what I do. I love to listen to it. I keep a list of people in my life who are what number. Or I'm an 8, guys. I'm 8. Have to know who they are and how I can love them best if something comes up. Half that I need to know that there are so many other different types in the world that are getting things done. Rose and I have been working together a lot lately. She has been showing me so many things that I'm just like, I'm glad that I'm a little better on my pride and I can move over to learning from her, because it's really been making me better to just know the things the way she knows them, because she's great at that stuff. So.
And then I was just going to give you a few tips on if you want to figure out your number. I'm not a huge fan of the tests. I think those were wrong every time I've tried one, and Brad tried it. So this is what I would say to do, is just start looking at some of the helps. There's a really good book called Road Back to You, and after every chapter, it does what Rose did, which I like that you did that. It just says, read these 10 things and see if you can relate to those. There's a great Instagram called, what's it called? Enneagram University, is that
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Love that one. So it's not based solely on your traits and behaviors. It's not determined so much as from what as to why you do what you do. So it's not necessarily just what you do, but why you do it. We're trying to get to the underlying girding of that. And then another one, an interesting point for those of us that are older, who were you at age 20? Mm. Your Enneagram doesn't change, but often when you're age 20, it's a little easier, like young adulthood is kind of when you were most that, which isn't, I don't know about that, but.
Yep.
Make sure you assess what already describes you versus what you wish and hope you were. You're not going to identify with everything. There's several things in mind that I just definitely don't relate to. And maybe that just means you're a little further down the road and you've worked through some things. And then she already talked about the negativity, but I think the reason why it focuses on negative is most of us are pretty negative. Like, we pretty much see our struggles. And so it just helps you identify. So that's your last thing.
I acknowledge. So for me, I'm like, read, listen, study. Do as much as you can to know who you are, because then that's going to help you to be able to serve those that are around you. Whether that's your spouse, whether that's kids, whether that's work, it's who you are is what you need to know. And know that we're all, no matter what, we're all loved by God, and we are chosen to be His daughters, and that's the most important thing. So.
Yep.